My daughter and my son, the 11 and 8-year-old, just completely fell apart, bursting into tears and weeping and wailing. And they were, you know, please don't leave daddy. And I think my little boy said something about us being poor and living on the street or something, you know, just instantly went an interesting place for an 8-year-old. So I just kind of gathered them all in my arms, and he went up to pack and get some more clothes to leave.
So in essence, he left you with the rubble of their emotions.
Mm-hmm.
That's Susan Birdsey, and she's a single mom of 5 kids, describing some of the challenges, the many challenges that she faced in the middle of an unwanted, unexpected divorce. She's back with us today on Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller, and our host is Focus President and author Jim Daly.
John, we're returning to this very powerful program, and I was touched last time by Susan's vulnerability or honesty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just dawned on me. I hadn't thought about it last time, but my mom divorced with 5 kids. And when I talk about that, I mean, the admirable job that she did with 5 kids, 5 to 15 at the time. You know, she was working 2 or 3 jobs to make sure things were held together. My dad did not support us after the divorce. Things were different then. And yet I'm sitting here thinking, wow, Susan has done this. She's really traveled the path of my own mom. Mm. And I was that little boy. And that's powerful for me. And as we talk about it again today, the reason we're talking about this, and I know that some of you might write us or contact us saying, why do you want to lift up the pain and agony of divorce? Hey, I want to tell you what, because it's happening. It's a part of reality in this culture. Christian couples are divorcing, and there's an impact there. And what we want to achieve by talking about it, and again, I'm so grateful for Susan being willing to do it, is how to do it in a God-honoring way. That may sound oxymoronic, but as it impacts you, you've got to get your family through this. And if you're the victim spouse, then you've got to pick up the pieces and do the honorable thing, do the godly thing. And that can be different for every situation. But we want to help educate you today. You may have a friend that's going through it. I'm hoping there's a pearl of wisdom. I know there will be a pearl of wisdom in what Susan shares. And Susan, let me just say, it's great to have you back here.
Thank you so much. It's very good to be back.
I just love your spirit. You have a bright smile. I can only imagine the days that you had tears in your pillow and how lonely that must have felt when your husband said to you, I'm leaving. We talked last time about how that came out of the blue. He simply went to pick up the dry cleaning and was gone a long time and came back and hit you with that. Your kids were playing in the background. You had to gather your senses. You had to find out what was going on. And over the course of a few days, it unfolded as he defended and then eventually was forthright with what was happening, an affair with another woman. And then you had to deal with the kids. And he told your kids, as we just heard in that clip, the way in which he did it. He told your kids what was happening. You said something that really... I mean, it really gripped my heart when you said he didn't touch them. He didn't. I mean, it brings tears to my eyes that a dad in that moment wouldn't know the damage he was doing to put his arm around his little daughter and hug her and say, I love you, but we're just not able to stay together. That had to have such an impact on your kids.
Huge. Definitely huge impact.
Okay. We got to reset a little bit with your ex-husband, the emotions that you were feeling. We talked last time about bitterness and how that root of bitterness, it really is the differentiator. You can call yourself a Christian, but if you go through trials and tribulations and you come out with great bitterness, you've got to question your walk with the Lord, because that's not the heart of a believer, even when bad things happen to you. Talk to us about how you dealt with that. There are many men and women that have been wounded in their marriages. Talk to us about how you dealt with that specifically.
Sure. It is a huge, huge issue, because it will infiltrate all areas of your life, your parenting to your children. It's impossible to hide bitterness. It just seeps into everything if you allow it to. I think there are some steps. I definitely knew God was the source of my strength. And
did it ever feel false to you, like it wasn't real, but you were saying it anyway?
Absolutely. Hmm. There definitely are times when you're just walking by faith, you know, and there were times where I had to be like, it's not about what I'm feeling. It's about what I know. It's about what I know. I know who God is. I know his character. I know I can trust him. I'm totally not feeling it right now. You know, and so many times, because there are just these mountains and valleys of this, you know, days where you feel like, I know in coping with it for myself, there would be days when I felt so sorrowful and I just wanted to fix it and I would do anything to fix it. And then there were days I was so angry. Mm. I just wanted, you know, just pound something and run away. And you just, the range of emotions is profound, what you're dealing with. But God is just this steady. I used to say I felt like I was in this rocky, tumultuous water all the time, but that there was this steady stream of peace underneath me, like my feet were in it.
You could
foundationally
feel that.
I was in it, but the rest of me was like, you know, just a complete mess. But I knew that God was going to get me through it. It's just hard to get through it, you know, and I think He did bring me through it. It was hard. It wasn't a month. It wasn't a day. It wasn't a week. It wasn't even a year. I mean, it's been a process. And I think you'll have good days and you'll have bad days. And you need to recognize that, you know, it's a process. And God is faithful to stay with you when you're faithful and when you're faithless. I knew I had to deal with anger. I think I would say a big thing with the anger issue is to recognize it as a valid emotion. You have some serious righteous indignation in there. You also have some, you know, I'm going to hunt you down and, well, I probably shouldn't say what.
But it's honest to have those feelings and those thoughts.
Yeah, you just want to do very bad things. My chapter about anger is slashing tires and other thoughts to take captive, because you kind of go that route. I'm just going to go slash all those tires and, you know, whatever. But I knew I had to take control of those emotions because I knew what that would do to my family. If I was angry, my children would be angry. Mm-hmm. I did not want to raise angry, bitter children. And I think for me, that was a very strong motivation.
And you have to model it so they can see it.
I have to
model it. Kids in that situation, they're not going to listen to your words, because words will be all over the place. They're going to watch your actions, and they're going to determine your honesty through your actions and through what they see in you.
Yes. And it's a constant battle. It's a conscious battle, too, to do that anger, bitterness thing. And I would say the one thing is not to allow yourself to be to make sure that your friends are people who don't want to jump into that pit of anger with you, because your friends feel it so deeply when they're walking you through this. And sometimes I think they almost take on more of that anger because they want to go out there and
set it straight
for you. And I knew I had to make sure the friends I surrounded myself, that I sought counsel from, were people that were going to hold me to a higher standard and say, I know you're feeling that. Let's not go there.
Well, and what you said last time in the description of your family, I mean, you were a prominent family, very service-oriented in the church. Your husband was an elder in the church. That puts added pressure on the situation, because now it's a veneer. You know, it wasn't real. It wasn't true. You got to ask yourself, what's happening? And that has to take its toll on you and on your husband in a certain way, too. Mm-hmm. You wrote about giving your husband an ultimatum. You tried for a few days and maybe a weeks to
weeks.
Think it through and to do and to prove to him that we have a chance. Let's try. But then you realize that you didn't think there was hope, and you gave your husband the ultimatum, me or her. That takes a lot of courage, and a lot of women will shrink back from that because they don't want to hear the answer that they may hear. How did you find the wisdom to make that statement to your husband, to give him that ultimatum? If you could describe that for us, and in looking back on it, do you think that was healthy?
Yes. I sought counsel, my pastor, a marriage counselor, friends that I really trusted, people that had gone through difficult circumstances who I knew were prayer warriors, who were, you know, just truly godly counsel, what to do. Because I think even in the Christian community, you get people that are like, kick him to the curb. You know, as soon as you find out, just, he didn't deserve you. Just, you know, and I was like, no, that's not what I feel called to. I made a covenant with this man. And until God tells me no, I'm going to stay. And so I really prayed about it. What was happening, it had been weeks. I was trying to convince him to stay. And he kept saying, I'm waiting for an aha moment. And I kept saying, you're not going to get an aha moment. There isn't an aha moment. Your aha moment is you're married to me. You have 5 kids. You stay with us. I noticed that his behavior was not changing for the better. And he was pulling away from our children. He was increasingly distant.
Which was his protection method, because he didn't want to face reality and really fess up to everything that had gone on.
Wouldn't set any boundaries on the relationship with the mistress. and it just seemed like it was time. And I would say what helped me, I had a friend that said, you know, at no point is it hopeless. And I knew that my saying choose to him was not my saying leave. I wasn't asking him to leave. I wasn't asking him for a divorce. I was saying choose. I'm holding you accountable for your actions. And there are consequences for what you're doing. And the consequences are you have to choose.
Now, when you said that, how was your stability emotionally? And what were you expecting to hear? And were you prepared for that answer?
Yes, I was. I had farmed all my kids out, and I had been praying, and God was so gracious to give me verses about standing strong and Him being my foundation and not shaking. It was just really interesting, the verses He brought me to. And I was just praying, God, if this is not what You want me to do, will You please make it abundantly clear when He walks through that door? Just give me a sense of where I need to go with this. Well, He was late, and I suspected that He had been running with her. And He didn't notice that our kids weren't there. You have six children. You know, that is almost inconceivable.
That would be immediately apparent when you walk through a door.
Exactly. He was very demanding and very rude, which had not been my husband prior to all of this happening. Not that type of person. Mm. He was like, well, I'm going to go take a shower and kind of have dinner on the table when I come back.
Gee.
I was like, wow, okay, well, I guess God just showed me.
That's confirmation.
He came down, and he ate dinner, and I sat across from him. And when he finished, I said, I need to talk to you. And I had prepared a settlement agreement. It's a property settlement agreement, I think is what it's called. The marriage counselor had said, if you're going to give your husband an ultimatum, you have to have something that he signs that says he's going to take care of you. Because as soon as he sets his foot outside of the door, any sense of guilt he has is going to diminish as each day passes, and he will no longer want to take care of you all. I had it on the table with me. He said, okay, what do you want to talk about? And I said, I want you to decide tonight if you're going to stay with the children and me, or you're going with her. I said, if you're going to go, I need you to sign this. And he instantly reached across the table and pulled it to him. And at that moment, I knew.
Yeah, no hesitation. Yeah.
And when he left, he said, he packed up some more things, and he said, well, I'm going to go sleep at the office. It was very emotional, and I had friends that were waiting. I had three couples from church that were kind of up at the Starbucks near my house, and as soon as he drove away, they drove up and were there for me.
You've mentioned that support group several times. How vital is that?
Oh, imperative. Godly support, people who are going to encourage you in your faith, who are not going to encourage you to be angry or bitter or malicious. Mm. It's very easy to go down that road. Yeah, absolutely.
Susan, after the discussion and you slide or he grabs the separation agreement and quickly wants to sign it, there's a whole new process in place now. Now you're moving from kind of an emotional environment to almost like a business environment where you're going to separate your assets now. You're headed to court. The judge is going to throw the gavel down. It's going to be done. Through that process, in your book, it indicates that your husband is not the one willing to do this. Yet, he's created the environment that the ultimatum needs to be put to him. How did you reconcile that? And I can only think of stories where I've heard men that they're almost numb. They don't want to initiate. They're fine if you do this to me, if you file for divorce. I'm not going to do anything. Talk about, from that point forward, what was happening in your relationship.
Well, what I didn't realize that the property settlement agreement, when you file it, becomes a legally binding document that begins the divorce proceedings in my state. I didn't realize that. There's so much going on, and it's very difficult to keep track of everything.
Well, nobody typically is an expert in this when it happens.
Yes. I did have a very good friend who did become my attorney, a Christian woman, who wanted reconciliation almost as much as I did. And I was, if you can envision it, that person with my heels dug in, like, I don't want a divorce. I don't want a divorce. I don't want a divorce. I don't want to do this. I don't know if this is what God wants me to do. And I knew it was that biblically I was okay, you know, because Jesus makes provisions for that with adultery. My church was supportive of whatever I wanted to do. They were very much walking me through it. And she kept saying to me, it's never too late. She's like, even if you're divorced, you can get remarried. She just kept giving me that perspective that you, for me, in my circumstances, in order to protect my children and myself financially and to make sure that we were cared for, we had to file at that point. And that's a lot of the women and men I have spoken to going through this, that is such a quandary as a Christian because you don't want to do this.
Yeah, you're trying to take the high road and hope.
Absolutely. You don't want to play this game. Right. I don't want to play the divorce game. It's difficult. It's time consuming. It's painful. You have to keep track of things. Oh, it was just a nightmare. And divorce, I always say to people, divorce is not a solution. It is another problem on top of a problem. Mm. It doesn't make anything better. It's just a whole nother set of problems. But having that perspective that this was just a way to protect my children and myself. It was a legally binding document, yes, but it didn't mean that I was giving up hope. It just meant I wanted to make sure the children and I were taken care of. Mm. You know, five kids is a lot to take care of. And that's what it did. And God totally protected me through that process. And I did not give up hope.
And I think in a way, the guilt there, again, of the offender, in this case, your husband, they may want to hang on to the fact, well, I didn't file. Mm-hmm. I wasn't the one that asked for this. But in essence, they were.
Yes.
Emotionally and in every other way. But it gives them a small out for their conscience, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I know, you know, divorce is a very difficult topic. And because nobody really knows how to walk through it. You know, we each have our individual journeys that we're doing that. And I think seeking godly counsel, your pastor, a Christian marriage counselor, and making those decisions for yourself. And, you know, God will guide you through it. And it's just like any painful thing in our lives. We walk through it. God is faithful.
What have you found in your own emotions, perhaps in friends, both male and female, who have had to struggle through what I could have done better to hold on to this marriage?
Mm-hmm. I think as women, we tend to look at ourselves not necessarily as a wife, but as a woman. What could I have done better? What's wrong with me as a woman? Whereas a man, it's very much about his role. What could I have done better? How could I have performed better? What has helped me with that, because I don't think you want to revisit the past and beat yourself up over your failures or perceived failures in your marriage, because there is no excuse for adultery, regardless of what was going on. There is no excuse. And our marriage was good, you know, and I think if you talk with marriage counselors, often they'll say it really, and the counselor we went to said to me many times, it wasn't about you. It wasn't about what you could have done, what you couldn't have done, what you did do, what you didn't do. It's not about that. It's about him. It's about him and God. And somebody that I knew that had gone through this and they were restored, the offender shared with me, he said, you know, you give up God first, then you give up your wife. And then you give up your kids. He said, you don't give up your wife first. You give up God. And the vacuum that you have in your heart that you're trying to fill with that physical relationship or the emotional relationship or whatever this inappropriate relationship is to replace God. So I think it's important not to beat ourselves up and try and figure out what went wrong. I think you have to come to the place where you go, God, what do you want to make of me through this? And how are you going to bring me through this? Make me into the woman you want me to be. And that's a hard process. And there are definitely some judgmental feelings you sense towards you. You can feel like you have this scarlet letter D all over you, divorced. I own that box now on those forms. I have to click divorced on there. It's very painful. It's very hard. And I think one of the things that really has helped me is to recognize that that's not my identity. It's my marital status.
Right.
And my identity is in Christ. And it's learning to define myself as a single woman and not as a married woman, as a single mom, and all those things, and to see the blessing in it, to see that God can work through these unexpected, difficult circumstances and still make something beautiful out of it. I mean, single parenting, oh, I do not recommend it. It is very hard. But I've seen God do amazing things. I have blessings every day I can focus on. It's where my focus is. Is my focus going to be on, I went through this really awful circumstance. Is that going to define me? Or is the person I became because of that going to be what I define myself by?
Well, and let me give a little definition of that. You can meet people that have been divorced 10 years and they're still railing They haven't moved on from that spot. And that's unhealthy, isn't it?
That's the forgiveness thing. If I forgive, if I allow God to enable me to forgive, if I make the decision, I kind of had to go through a process. And to make the decision to forgive, that's not necessarily forgiving. That's saying, I'm gonna try and do this.
It.
I'm going to ask God to help me through it, and then I'm going to act on that. I'm going to act like I have forgiven you. I'm going to treat you respectfully and kindly and graciously. I don't feel it. I'm going to treat you that way. And in doing that, it takes the power of that circumstance, that situation, that offense away. I have the right to be angry, but I don't exercise that right.
Were you describing a continuum there? Was there a point that you can remember where it all fell together and you felt that you were forgiving him? Do you remember the day that, boom, it really feels like it's in my heart now?
Yes, and I wrote him a letter that day and told him I had forgiven him. I said, I know I will still struggle with anger towards you because of the repercussions on our children. But as far as your relationship with me, I forgive you, and I'm moving forward, and I'm going to try and always treat you respectfully, and I wish the best for you, and I'm praying for that God will do amazing things in your life. And God was so gracious because a couple hours later, my ex-husband texted me, just said thank you.
Wow.
Which for me was huge, because I didn't think he would even acknowledge it. But that was a little step, I thought, you know, for him to say that to me. That was a glimmer of the man I knew.
Yeah, I mean, you're being very kind, but I mean, it shows more about your graciousness.
It was hard fought. It's not an easy thing. And you don't decide and just forgive. Yeah. It is a process. And it is a continual at sometimes. You know, I think you forgive the offense. But there is, just like with anything, you're going to have to continually forgive. You know.
Well, and let me ask you this, which is attached to that. Looking ahead, and I hope this doesn't happen. But you look at your little girl. And maybe she's 18 now. And she's had a bad experience on a date or something, and she comes home and it flares up about the loss of her father in that way and what that's done for her, and how she's looking for affirmation in wrong places. That will be a temptation to get angry because of the residual effect on your kids from your husband's decision. Have you thought about that?
Yes. Yes, I have. I do think that's going to be a struggle. I mean, in all honesty, I don't know, apart from God just helping me do that, how to do that. There are circumstances with my ex-husband where he does not see or will not see that this affects our children. He will not see that. He will not admit that he has abandoned his children, will not admit that, and feels like he is a very good father and that the kids are fine. I don't think he can go there. And, you know, part of that is, sometimes it's laughable, the things he'll say. And I just have to be a duck, let it slide off my back, because I can't do anything about it. And apart from the most powerful thing I can do, which is pray for my kids.
Yeah.
And, pray that God will take this and turn it around and make them stronger, more compassionate, faithful individuals because they have been through this.
Susan, you are hitting it so straightforward. And I so appreciate your vulnerability. Susan Birdsey, author of the book, When Happily Ever After Shatters. This has been so helpful. And I know many, many people, both men and women, will be helped with the comments that you've made. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, my
here
pleasure.
At Focus.
Thank you so much.
And I appreciate, Susan, just how eloquently you've put it these past couple of days, this reminder that we will have difficult circumstances in our lives, but God is there to walk along with us and to walk through those days with us. Our program was provided by Focus on the Family. And on behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team here, thanks for listening in. I'm John Fuller.
Now, it might be that Susan's story has reminded you about someone you know who's grieving over the loss of a marriage. And if that's the case, we'd recommend you share this conversation with them as a bit of encouragement. You'll find this program on our website, or you can point them to the podcast. You also may want to direct them to our counseling team here at Focus. Our counselors are available to talk and to pray and refer to resources that can help begin that healing process. And I'd like to mention a book we have called Helping Children Survive Divorce. These and other resources are available when you call us on 031-716-3300 or online. You can find them at our website at safamily.co.za. And then finally, as we close out today's broadcast, let me just remind you that every day people are facing challenges and need encouragement, much like what we've offered today. And we rely on generous friends like you to help us continue providing programs and resources. And I'd like to encourage you to help us out this month with a donation, particularly if you've never contributed to Focus before. You're the fuel in our engine that keeps us going, and we appreciate any gift you can make, which will go a long way in touching lives for Christ. You can donate online or when you call us. Thanks for listening in today. For Focus on the Family Africa, I'm Alison Schnell, inviting you back next time, when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.